You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Field Goals Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Schultz. The first round of the NFL draft was Thursday evening, and the Seattle Seahawks, they stayed put at number 9, and they went with an offensive tackle, Charles Cross, out of Mississippi State. Joining me to talk about the pick is Samuel R. Gold. You know him from Sam's Film Room up at Field Goals. And Sam, he had a mock draft just a couple days ago, and you know who he had going at number 9? None other than Charles Cross. So joining to talk about the pick is Samuel R. Gold. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sam the Prophet, after nailing that pick to Seattle just a couple days ago. Well done.
Go and read the comments. People are not happy about the pick when I made it. But suddenly, people are now happy. Charles Cross is the guy. And I'm saying Charles Cross is the man. I love him.
Well, you know, it's funny because I feel like leading up to the draft from a Seahawks perspective, I think that Cross was looked at as an unlikely fit for Seattle based on his run blocking ability. I would almost just say that it's his limited run blocking just based off of the offense that they ran there with the Mike Leach offense, just not a whole lot of run blocking snaps. And I think one of the things that you pointed out in one of your videos too, just breaking down Charles Cross, is that he not a super physical type blocker. So a little bit different than maybe what we've seen in the past from the Seahawks.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that's where the debate kind of came down to. If you look historically at the Seahawks, they have mostly run kind of this inside zone gap scheme where what they would do is they do a lot of shotgun inside zone with some read option with Russell Wilson. They haven't let him really, he hasn't really kept the ball in, I don't know, maybe like 3 years at this point. And so the entire scheme was kind of based on him being a threat to pull that edge defender out of the way in order to create kind of cutback lanes on especially those shotgun runs. Then what would happen was that they started mixing in these gap runs and kind of like maybe an occasional power run here and there. But once Shane Waldron took over, and this is something I broke down before Shane Waldron took over, what I've talked about while Shane Waldron has been there, and what I'm going to talk about now is that the entire scheme is basically zone-based. So this is not, this pick to me, he fits perfectly into this scheme. There's a reason why my video on YouTube, I even mentioned that the Seahawks would be a perfect place for him to land.
You mentioned the outside zone teams, right? Like San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Yeah, he fits that mold. And the thing is that his movement is extremely underrated. Yes, he did not test well, but that doesn't bother me one bit because on film, he can do it. And the thing is that basically the issues that we saw with his film was mostly a little bit of inconsistent angles in terms of what would happen is that if you're doing a reach block as an outside zone run blocker, your goal is to basically push out as far as you can while still having the capacity to seal a little bit inside in case someone spikes. And so what would happen is that if someone spikes inside, you just have to be able to get your hands on them and push them out of the way. And that's what seals the outside so that a running back can just bounce that baby outside. And that's where all the big runs come from in outside zone. It's basically an over-aggressive, eager defensive end that spikes inside and your running back hits the edge and goes for it. And the issue we saw in film when it came to Charles Cross in this scheme was that he would overset. And the thing is that in a lot of zone principle schemes, the oversetting is actually not as bad because what happens is that historically, a defensive end will eventually realize, oh crap, I got to get in front of this block and they'll run with you. So the coaching point that Kyle Shanahan has, the coaching point that Sean McVay has is that you can push far and with nice reach steps, and you can push further out because the guy has to follow you. But the thing is that in a wide zone scheme, so that's more like outside zone where you're trying to stretch the perimeter. When it comes to wide zone, which is more of what our scheme is with the Seahawks, the thing is that the edge defender, when you're not running outside zone, you're running what's called mid zone weak, which is basically that's like the main run that Sony Michel with the Rams ran. That's the main run that that when they weren't running outside zone was that Todd Gurley feasted on. And this is a very heavy run call where instead of necessarily the offensive lineman on the like a left tackle or right tackle, instead of them reach blocking and forcing that run, you're also doing a little bit of kind of drive blocking because you're just trying to widen him. And what happens is the cutback lane usually happens between the left tackle and the left guard. And basically this edge rusher is basically trapped in between, I need to get outside this block, so I'm going to try to push hard to get outside this block. And then as a run blocker, you're trying to push them further out. Or if he spikes inside, you try to seal them. And so you're kind of in that kind of back and forth battle, especially on these runs. And the thing is that with, and the reason why I bring all this up is that when it comes to Charles Cross, he has the agility, he has the footwork, and he has the placement in terms of his angles to do all of that. He was a little bit inconsistent, and I'll be the first to say that. He was a little bit inconsistent just because of the limited number of snaps. This wasn't a capabilities thing. This wasn't a he didn't test well thing. This wasn't any of that. This was an inconsistency in terms of basically numbers, number of times he actually did it.
Right.
And if you're drafting for a 10-year player and you're picking top 10, who gives a catfish about that? Like it doesn't matter, because the thing is that you can teach that, especially if they have the footwork. They've shown the natural ability to have the angles, and they show the natural desire in order to want to seal.
Yeah.
And he's shown all that. This isn't like Ikem Ekwonu, who I did not want the Seahawks to take with this pick. And I'm glad he actually went earlier, because Ikem Ekwonu is like a powerful dude, but you have to teach him how to pass block. And when Charles Cross is the second best pass blocker in this entire draft with the best footwork I've seen in terms of his mirroring and his agility, I just like, to me, it's a no brainer. He fits the scheme. He's a good pass blocker. He's your left tackle. It's that simple to me.
I just like knowing that we have a solid left tackle based on, you know, the 1 year that I think we had George Fant and, yeah, that was a rough time. So yeah, I'm happy that they went offensive line. I guess I was caught up in some of these same concerns that a lot of the other Seahawks fans had. And I think when it came to the run blocking too, I know we spent a lot of time on the run side of this, but I'm so used to watching guys in college who are Seahawks offensive linemen who are driving dudes to the ground on every run play. And that's just not Cross's style.
Yeah, it's not at all. And the thing is that, so in a zone scheme, you don't need that. The only things you need in a zone scheme are positioning and angles. That's it. And when I say positioning, I mean your ability to move your hips. Like you watch the dude's hips, and if you can get his hips around the edge and seal them back inside, when I say angles, I mean the angle he takes after the snap to get into position. It's kind of like a 1-2 thing, right? Because if you have poor angles, you're gonna have a hard time getting your hips in position. But whatever, we'll just keep them separate for now.
I also think it's funny, Sam, that right after Russell Wilson leaves is the time that they get a left tackle who excels at pass blocking.
Yeah, it's but the thing is, Dwayne Brown excelled at pass blocking. He was like one of the best pass blockers. Oh, yeah. For a while. Like I'm happy they're finally spending the resources. The right tackle spot is obviously, I don't know what's going to happen with that. Mainly, I'm hoping Stone takes over, or if he ends up being good, I'm hoping Jake Curran. I'm hoping we see something. But
the Seahawks have never had a right tackle consistently, Sam. It's part of being a Seahawks fan that
part of life. Yeah. I'm with you. But I'm just so pumped for Cross. Like is run blocking abilities are so overblown. Like it's to me, it's a no brainer.
Well, with the move to Cross, then with picking him in the top 10, does this mean the end of Dwayne Brown, do you think?
Yeah, Without a doubt. I think unfortunately Brown is gone. I thought Pete Carroll and John Schneider already said that Cross is your future left tackle. Like I think that's pretty much done, and they're gonna probably spend any extra resources getting a right tackle or someone either to fill that spot or probably focus on defense. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and I only ask that because, you know, in terms of Cross was asked if he has played any right tackle. So do you allow him to learn more on the right side, bring back Brown, and then you have, you know, two pretty solid dudes on the at the tackle spots for a year, and with that idea that maybe you move Cross back to the left side after a year? That kind of idea, I guess, is out there.
I don't like the idea of moving positions and moving sides. I was listening to an Ask Me Anything from Jonah Williams, and either him or another offensive lineman said going from left to right is like sitting on a toilet and using your left versus right hand to wipe. The entire sequence is just completely off and you're not used to it. Because if you think about it, if this dude has been at left tackle for his entire life, he's learned to lean on his left foot. He's learned to hop from his right to his left. He's learned that to move his body in a certain way that moving him back and forth just doesn't really make sense. I never understood the argument that, oh, that'll give him tackle experience. I would honestly rather play him at left guard than play him at right tackle just for that reason. So I'm in the opinion that you just stick him at left tackle. He'll have some growing pains. His ability to redirect back inside on twists, that was average at best. I'm gonna be the first to say he's going to let some sacks in just from a stunt inside or a player that sets him up outside and moves back inside. He's going to give him a couple sacks for doing that. But as a rookie, that's okay. That's fine. You can learn.
One of the things, though, now that you bring up stunts, Sam, I feel like that was such a problem with the offensive line as a whole for the Seahawks last season, and maybe even going back a couple seasons. It was nice watching some of these highlight videos and seeing Cross pick up so many stunts.
Yeah, I think it's more or less that his redirect ability, which might be more of like an innate thing, is just not as quick as what others are. Like Evan Neal is much better at it, for example. But if he can work well with Damian Lewis, and if he can work well with a center that can help out when needed, I think long term you have a really good left tackle, you have a really good left guard, and I guess we'll see what happens with Austin Blythe at center. But I'm not nearly as worried about that side of the offensive line going forward.
The Seahawks, they get Charles Cross at number 9. There was the thought that maybe they could trade back into the end of the first round. They don't do that. They stay put. They have 2 picks now in the second round. And coming up after the break, I want to talk to Sam about where the Seahawks might go with those 2 picks. That's coming up next. I'm joined by Samuel R. Gold of Sam's Film Room. You can catch it on YouTube. You can catch it up at fieldgoals.com when you have some Seahawks-specific videos. And we are talking NFL draft. And Sam, the Seahawks, they don't move up into the first round. I think there was maybe a curiosity around the idea of coming up for a quarterback, but they stay put. And a lot of quarterbacks still on the board. Only the Pittsburgh Steelers take QB. Could you see the Seahawks going QB here at the top of the second?
I think they could. I think they really could. We have 3 quarterbacks that I would be completely okay with them taking. You have Malik Willis. Obviously, he was my number 1 quarterback on the board. I actually had him as a late first round pick, like a mid to late first round pick. So it's not shocking he fell. I'm shocked he fell out of the first round, but I'm not shocked he fell further than we expected for that reason, even though I did kind of expect like a QB needy team to kind of jump up. And the Pittsburgh Steelers were kind of, you know, that I thought that they were that team.
Yeah, the Steelers were one of those teams. You know, the New Orleans Saints, when they moved up and took wide receiver, that was a little bit of a surprise to me. I thought maybe they could take a quarterback there in the first round.
I thought so, too. I agree with you. Outside of Malik Willis, Desmond Ridder and Sam Howell, those are my top 3 quarterbacks left in that order. I wouldn't mind it if they take either of those guys. And obviously it comes down to scheme fit and kind of preference at that point. My money bet right now is they go with like best player available, which will probably be like an edge or like a cornerback or something like that.
Any guys that you have kind of on your list there as the best available that they would pick?
Yeah. So Arnold Ebukidi, and obviously I probably mispronounced his name. David Ojabu tore his ACL tore his Achilles at his pro day. I think he could be a really good developmental player for the following year. I think Drake Jackson from USC, any of those three guys I'd be very happy about. Nick Bonito from Oklahoma, I believe. I think I'd be very happy with him. In terms of cornerbacks, you know, an Andrew Booth or Kyler Gordon from Washington and Booth from Clemson, I'm more than happy with either of them. So there's even a guy like N'Kobe Dean. And I know we've picked we got a linebacker recently, but N'Kobe Dean would be a lot of fun to watch paired with Jordan Brooks. That'd be a really fun combo.
Yeah.
So I would be completely okay with N'Kobe Dean, especially as a value pick.
I was surprised that he fell out of the first round when they were talking about five Georgia defenders going in the first round. I thought maybe the safety would slip out, but not Dean.
Yeah, I think it kind of comes down to what hybrid role are you going to use him in? Because his ability to take on blocks head on was not the best. And he was kind of shielded from that because you have like a Jordan Davis, because you have Trayvon Walker, because you have a Devontae Wyatt, you know, like you don't have to take on as many blocks head on, and he can just use his skills, which is just being like a freaking missile, just running around making plays.
So when you mentioned quarterbacks a minute ago, you mentioned in your top three, Sam Howell, and I feel like Matt Corral has been more of the consensus guy in the top three. Why Howell over Corral for you?
It's not that I'm not a fan of Matt Corral. I just feel like his upside is relatively limited. When I went through my film on him, his release was excellent. His short accuracy and medium accuracy was fine too. And with that release, he was very quick and very decisive at getting rid of the ball and doing that. The problem comes down to the fact that he is a bigger project than pretty much everybody wants to talk about. His entire scheme was run pass options and basically screens. And it was something like 38% of his plays were like that, whereas in college, you're typically in the 20% range. He had like one of the highest RPO rates in screen rates in the entire college last season. And so what happens is that when you're going through that system, you have to find reads. And when I went through and looked, I searched for plays where he had more of a full field progression, or at least one half the side for progression where he could work backside. He never got to the backside receiver, and that receiver was open. And it killed me, because once he went through those first 1, 2, 3 reads, and the thing is that he can read his side fine. He just ran. He just decided to put his head down and ran. And you're going to run into that same issue with a guy like Sam Howell too, who had a lot of run pass options and stuff like that. But I don't think it's nearly as bad. And I think Howell is more upside. So for me, it comes down to, if you're going to take a low floor player, at least get the high ceiling out of it. And that's what I just don't know if I'm convinced that Matt Corral has that, especially because the number of deep passes that I just saw him poorly place. So I'm just not as big of a fan on him in terms of long-term upside.
And to be honest, I think I kind of like Howell even more than Ridder. I think Howell gets knocked a lot for his 2021 offense that he ran, because I feel he ran the ball so much. But a big part of it is he lost all his weapons from the previous season.
Yeah, not having a, was it?
Javonte Williams, Diami Brown, the receiver that went to the Vikings in the sixth.
He lost everybody. And I went back and watched his game. I think it was a game against Miami. He was a different quarterback. He didn't run nearly as much. He only scrambled basically when he had to. He was more willing to sit in the pocket and throw it. And so I think there's a level of unfair bias towards his 2021 ability, because most in the scouting community are only watching 2021. Because they think, okay, that if that was his best performance, then therefore it has to be more recent, and that's the quarterback you're going to get. And I think the team that is going to look back at his 2020 season, they're going to see a more polished pocket quarterback. Whereas if you only look at 2021, you're going to see a scrambler who plays hero ball left and right. Also, his game against South Carolina in the bowl game was just ridiculous. Like, he was so good in that game that it just makes me wonder if that's the quarterback you're going to get, or if he's just going to be, you know, like a Wake Forest guy where it was, you know, he was just average.
And he also gets knocked because he's about the size and almost looks like Baker Mayfield. And I feel like his personality wise, completely different guy too.
Yeah. He, I, I got vivid like PTSD flashbacks to Baker Mayfield, but somebody gave me a really good
just
comp
because he looks like Baker, though. He does not have the same personality. I'm telling you.
No, he doesn't. But they both had hero ball tendencies in college, too.
Yeah.
I think someone told me a small Josh Allen. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, I think that's right.
He's Samuel R. Gold of Sam's Film Room. Sam, if they want to go and check out your videos, where do they go? If they want to support you on Patreon, where should they head for that too?
Yeah, it's if you find me on Patreon at Samuel R. Gold and on YouTube, I'm just Samuel Gold NFL. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
A big thanks to Samuel R. Gold coming on the show and talking a little bit of Charles Cross here right after the Seahawks picked last night. So we are going to be looking for more picks. I don't know if I'm going to be live streaming tonight like I did last night, but I will try and have some analysis for you not too long after the Seahawks make their picks Friday night. And of course, we'll have some more draft talk throughout the weekend. So stay tuned for that. Also, check out fieldgoals.com if you are looking for more to read on the draft picks. We got draft reactions as well. And so check that out. Fieldgoals.com. Devin Siggy has the 4 best players available on day 2 of the draft. Check out that article. Till next time, go Hawks.